We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? This is the 63rd episode of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. We are still down in Tampa, Florida at spring training. Scott, what's up, man?
What's up? So this is a little unique. We're sitting. It is 10:45 on Saturday morning. We're recording for Tuesday's show. We wanted to do it while we were still together in Tampa. So, yeah, man, I know we had some failures of technology last night, a little bit of technical difficulties with recording some decent audio. So hopefully you got to listen to show number 62 and we're able to put up with the crappy audio that we had.
Well, I just realized that 62 might come out after 63.
It possibly will. Maybe Jabba cursed us.
Possibly.
I mean, I think that's what it was. You called him like a fat little man running around, I think, at some point.
No, I called the Bat Boy a fat little man running around.
Well, either way, I think that 62 might just be a cursed number for us.
Well, I'm dedicating the 63rd episode to another fat guy, Chris Britton, on the Yankees. He was, I think, on the Yankees in 08, pitched a few games. He started. He was a big dude.
Yeah, former Oriole.
Yeah.
He was a guy who floated around. He was a big guy. But we're getting definitely going to be running out of options as we continue going. We're going to be hitting spring training, basically.
Yep. We're going to be hitting
old spring training numbers.
Yeah, we're going to be hitting exactly old spring training numbers and backup players. So we should have really started this from the beginning and it would have been much better.
Yeah. Like, do we know what Jeter first came up with in spring training? What number
was
he?
Always number two?
I don't know. I don't know if from the very, very beginning in spring training, I doubt they gave him number two from the get.
I know he was wearing number two in 95.
I know, but I'm talking about in spring training, when he gets a call up for spring training, because you know all these guys are wearing different numbers.
Right. I'm not sure. It's a good question.
We'll have to look that up.
I'll have to check out the internet archives to figure that out. How are you feeling this morning?
I feel good. I feel fine. Yeah, I feel ready to go.
I think you're probably feeling a little better than I am.
Yeah, well, I'm a seasoned professional. I know that I have to do certain things to feel better in the morning. So, like, consistent water. Like, I pop Advil before I go to bed and chug water. I have a routine.
Can you hook me up with some Advil after this?
Yes, I got some.
If anyone was watching the Periscope last night on Friday night, you'll know why we aren't feeling the best. We had a full day of spring training baseball and drinking and eating, so it was a fun day, though.
It was a fun day. We got a lot of good stuff. We talked to a lot of good Yankee fans that were, we got some cool interviews. That was fun. And, you know, we ended up being fans, too, at the Steinbrenner, and walked around and saw all the plaques and all the stuff. So we definitely took it all in. It was pretty cool.
It was an interesting crowd at the stadium. I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting maybe more young people than there were.
I mean, you got to understand where we are, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess.
There's a lot, it's a big retirement community.
Yeah.
And the people who can come and travel down here usually are a little bit older, you know what I mean? Who have taken off work and just
means
to travel.
We saw a good amount of, like, our father-son combinations, family combinations, which was cool.
Yeah.
It's some people, we ran into somebody who had season tickets.
Yep.
Season spring training tickets.
Yeah, that's a cool thing if you live in Tampa. I mean, I would definitely do that.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. I mean, I think spring training to me is one of the, it's just a different element of seeing the professional players because, well, you don't have the access you used to have back in the day with spring training. Like, when I went to Vero Beach for Dodgers spring training, I used to be able to go up and like, right there with the players. And I know the world is different, but also security's different with the players at this point. I mean, they're just making so much damn money. But, yeah, it's definitely different. Like, you're closer than you ever can be. And it's pretty interesting.
Even if you're in the last row, it's still not far away. You could walk down and get close to players.
Yeah, it's pretty relaxed. And there's really not a bad seat in that place.
Right.
It's a minor league park, so you got to think about that.
Yeah.
There's not, even if you're at the last level of the, quote, upper deck, you still have a good view.
Yeah. And I think if I had season tickets, though, I'd probably just pop in for the first few innings.
Oh, yeah.
Because we didn't really watch the last 2-3 innings as it is.
Well, I think, you know, with spring training, if you're there too, you get to know a lot of the younger guys as well. So you definitely have to have if you go spring training season tickets, you got to have like a different love for the game and really just know who these players are, because you're going to see a lot of minor leaguers. And to me, I mean, I have a feeling a lot of the people who are season ticket holders for spring training are also Tampa Yankees season ticket holders. So they enjoy baseball. They like going to see the minor league guys, and they're just kind of there for the love of the game.
The Yankees not having names on their backs of their jerseys is kind of difficult when you've got numbers 77 in and number 94 in the eighth inning. It's like, who the hell is playing center field?
So do you
right
feel
now
for John Sterling and Susan Wallman when they have no idea who's out there?
They do an impressive job.
Yeah,
they only get it wrong half the time, which is better than I would do probably.
It was cool because on Saturday, on Friday, when they had the full squad there, when you see the amount of guys that are lined up in the dugout, it's pretty neat because there's just no room for all these guys. So half the team is literally on the fence, and you can see all the guys right there. And we were right there. We were five rows back from the dugout, which is pretty neat.
We got to see how – you made a comment this morning how – young everybody looks.
Yes.
Especially some of the guys who are just trying to scratch and claw to make the team. They're babies. They look like they're 12 years old. In reality, they're 20 years old. It's insane.
It's just when you get up real close with the guys, you see that they're kids playing baseball. And I mean, obviously the guys, like, there's some grizzly old vets in there, but you see all the minor leaguers up close like that, and you just realize and remember how young they are.
I'm getting to the age now where everyone is starting to be younger than me, who's on the team, which is a problem.
It's a problem. You better get used to.
It's a problem for me that I need to get used to accept that. I'm 27 now, so it's starting to happen where everybody is younger on the team, or not everybody.
All the prospects.
The prospects and Didi and Castro are 26 years old.
Right.
And Castro's been in the league forever, I feel like.
Yeah.
You think of him as like a 32-year-old vet, but he's still 26 years old.
It's just the time we live in, man. As you get older, they stay the same age.
a little
Dazed Confused quote.
So we got on the 62nd episode, we kind of just rambled. We were just talking about our reactions to spring training and the game.
We had a very loose agenda.
Yeah, loose agenda.
That completely got off track.
Yeah, it started to see who you could beat in a race. That was, I think, about 20 minutes of the show. So we're going to try and stick to an agenda today, since this is our normal Tuesday show. And I apologize. Don't get confused if 63 comes out before you've listened to 62. So we're going to get the audio from that one way or the other, even if Scott has to pay $35 to download it from that shady website that you found. So first on the agenda is the fact that Paul O'Neill and then Johnny Damon endorsed Donald Trump. This came out of
came out of right field?
Worst joke ever. This came out of right field. But I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday at the Trump rally. All of a sudden, he points and says, "Oh, Paul O'Neill of the Yankees, you endorse me, right?" It's like we're watching an SNL skit.
Well, this whole thing's been an SNL skit. So, I mean, it really doesn't... It's staying on course for what it's been. It's just been a debacle, the whole thing. And... you know, I mean, it's impossible not to talk about politics right now as far as, I mean, we're not going to get into political situations, obviously, or political opinions.
We're not going to do political opinions.
No, but when you have Donald Trump, who's just completely taken over mass media, and that's all you see, and then all of a sudden Paul O'Neill gets called as an endorsement, or, you know, gets put on the blast as a Trump endorser.
It was,
with Johnny Damon.
It was
like,
hilarious, though. Trump points over, the camera pans over to Paul O'Neill, he's sitting there with his wife, and you can kind of tell he's like, shit. Like, you had to call me out, Donald, like, damn you. Donald's like, you endorsed me, right? Right, Paul? And he's like, I'm here. He was kind of like the least ringing endorsement possible, but it was an endorsement, and people went ape shit on Twitter.
Speaking of the whole, this is a little off topic, but whenever I see Christie behind Trump, you know,
I mean, there was the video of him at that rally.
Of the Chris Christie face, yeah.
But all I can think of, and I don't know if you remember this, but the SNL skit where they did a Rudy Giuliani, because I don't know if you remember Rudy Giuliani's kid behind some of his press conferences would be like jumping on his back. Like when Giuliani was mayor of New York.
I don't remember that.
But. So they did a skit of that making fun of that, and Chris Farley played the kid and was like jumping on Rudy Giuliani's back. And that's all I could think of the entire time of Chris Christie jumping on Trump's back and like annoying him.
And now Ben Carson's also an endorser of Trump.
Oh,
and
he?
If I were Trump, I would not make that known. Because Ben Carson is psychotic.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been keeping up the past few days with this whole thing. So yeah.
People were mad at O'Neill, and I get that they don't like Trump, but this just goes to the fact that politics is such a sensitive issue with people.
Right. Politics and religion, man. Don't talk about it.
Yeah, politics and religion. I don't care what your religious beliefs are or what your political affiliations are. I just would really prefer you to keep it to yourself. Because it's easier for everybody.
But that's just not your decision. That's the thing. Like, if somebody has something to say and they want to say it, then they have the right to say it. And people should just not get bent out of shape, I think, with the way that they say it. It's their opinion. Why? Who cares?
If you're a public figure,
it doesn't change
though,
how he does what he did for the Yankees and the way he talks about baseball.
If you're a public figure like O'Neill, though, you kind of have to understand there's going to be criticism.
No doubt.
It might be better off just keeping it to yourself. Unless he's super, super passionate about Donald Trump being president. Which, I don't know if he is.
Well, he put his suit and tie on, and he walked out the door with his wife, knowing he was going to a Trump rally. Knowing that there was a possibility that something could happen. You never know. And he put himself in that situation. So he obviously doesn't care if he knows. Everybody there saw that he was a Trump person. Everybody has a cell phone.
Do you think this is going to affect him anyway on the Yes broadcast?
No. I think people are going to forget about it. I think it's news right now.
Unless
it's not going to be news next week.
Unless he actually does start like doing more for Trump, then people won't forget about it.
I don't think it's going to be a big thing. I mean, I think if Trump fades, which I don't know if he will.
He's going to get the endorsement probably.
I think it's news right now, and I think people are going to forget about it. Nobody's going to care when the baseball season comes and all that, so.
Yeah, and someone on Twitter tweeted me saying, "Oh, does this mean O'Neill is out of the Yes broadcast?"
No.
And I'm like, "Come on,
it's ridiculous.
Yes can't fire somebody. You can't fire somebody over their political affiliations."
I don't know what you can and can't do, but it's not going to happen. O'Neill's fine. O'Neill's always said things. So
I did enjoy the New York Post cover though, "The Boys of Dumber," with Damon and O'Neill.
I saw that. I mean, Johnny Damon was never known as the sharpest tool in the shed.
No.
He's always had, I mean, just the way he talks is he's got a very interesting way of talking. I'll never forget the comments when somebody interviewed him about A-Rod and the whole steroid thing. And he made just like the most priceless quote. And, you know, it's not like murder. I'm like, what, Johnny, what are you talking about? It's not murder.
Like,
I'm like, okay, Johnny, way to take that completely off topic.
I like what he did there. He went the complete end of the spectrum, saying, "Hey, look, he could have murdered somebody, so chill out. It was only steroids."
The funny thing is that video is nowhere to be found online. I searched high and low for it, and I cannot find it anymore.
That'd be a nice soundbite, nice clip.
Yeah.
It's not
so
murder.
If anybody's listening and can find that Johnny Damon soundbite, please send it to me. I've been looking for it everywhere.
Yeah,
we can
use it anytime somebody grounds into a double play or strikes
out.
Hey, it's not murder.
It would be a great soundbite.
I just grounded into a double play with the bases loaded, no runs. Hey,
it's not
at least
murder.
I didn't kill somebody.
So yeah, send that over if you find it, please.
It seems like Yankees are just making headlines because also in the news is Goose Gossage, who's always been a loud-spoken guy. He does not hide his opinions.
I like that. I mean, people are so sensitive these days about the way people feel. And a guy like Goose Gossage, who's definitely from a different generation, and he just doesn't care what people think after what he says.
But he believes his generation was the best generation. And
that's
there's
fine.
No question about that.
He just doesn't like young people. Like you told me before, he's like, "Get off my lawn."
Yeah, it's a total get off my lawn.
I mean, I understand it. As I get older, I literally want people to get off my lawn too.
Yeah, but you want them to physically get off your lawn.
Physically get the hell off my lawn.
Right.
Yeah. But I
Goose Gossage just wants everyone to get off of his hypothetical lawn.
Right, but if kids are actually on his physical lawn, he will yell at them to get off his lawn. The point being, as you get older, your tolerance starts getting a lot smaller. And you just don't want to tolerate the things that are out there that annoy you. And when there's a microphone in your face and you're being asked questions about certain things, you know, he just kind of spilled the beans and then just kept going.
His rant consisted of three main parts. The first being that he was complaining about nerds running baseball.
And talking about sabermetrics.
Yeah, sabermetrics, which if you agree or disagree with sabermetrics, there is a place for them in the game to building a team. I'm not saying the game could be all sabermetrics. You still need to understand other aspects of baseball and that you can only tell by watching players play. But sabermetrics has revolutionized the way you build a team. So I don't think there's any denying the fact that it is beneficial to building a baseball team.
And, the biggest thing I think with a lot of the old school guys with the old school baseball mentality and the baseball purists, if you will, a lot of these guys go off of the eyeball test. I mean, you either know how to play baseball or you don't know how to play baseball. And Goose Gossage was the type of guy where, look, I'm going to close the game. I don't care if it's three outs, if it's six outs. If you need me to get nine outs, I'll go and do it. These guys are just cut from a different cloth. You know, they go out and they just play the game because it's a game to be played and it's not a game to be overanalyzed.
You've seen Moneyball, right?
Yes.
Do you remember the scene when they're sitting at the table and they're preparing for the season? And it's the first time the Jonah Hill character is sitting at the table with all of the scouts on Oakland. And I understand this was a complete dramatization and an exaggeration of the situation. But Billy Bean, Brad Pitt's character, was pointing to different people saying, "What do you got on these guys?" And everybody's comments were, "Oh, he's got a real nice swing. He's got an eye for the game. He's got a lot of hustle out there." And there's nothing like on paper. There's no numbers that they were analyzing. It was just all eyeball test. And Billy Bean's sitting there rolling his eyes, and he points to Jonah Hill, and he's like, "Well, he's got a .327 on base percentage. He's got this, blah blah blah. He walked. His pitch selection is XYZ." And the complete contrast between the two was really, I love that scene because it really portrayed it well.
Well, scouts aren't looking at numbers like that. They're looking at mechanics. They're looking at the way he acts on the field, like mannerisms.
Right.
The certain things that he does defensively. Like there's certain things you can see. Like they're looking for a certain hitch in a swing.
Yep.
That would maybe, the thing is like all of these things can coexist, and they should coexist.
And that's would be the best scenario.
Because you could, a scout could see a hitch in some guy's swing, and then you look at the analytics and you're saying, well, because of this hitch in the swing, he's having a hard time hitting the outside curve.
Right.
And, you know, these can live together. So that's the thing. You know, I think there's a place for both. But I think some people take the saber stuff too far.
I agree. The second part of Gossage's rant was the fact that you can no longer slide into second base hard with the Utley rule, which we just mentioned on the last podcast. And also you can't take out the catcher. So it's sort of like the pussification of the game is what he's talking about here.
And I totally...
We agree with this.
I'm with him on this 100%. I can't stand these rules. And he talks about Buster Posey being in the wrong position and gets... Look, but if Buster Posey was a backup catcher, if he was somebody
John
that
Ryan
nobody...
Murphy.
If he was John Ryan Murphy, it never would have happened. But because he was Buster Posey, because I'm sure the Players Association started pressing down on the commissioner's office and they were getting pressure from the owners and things like this to protect their assets, that's when rules start getting into place. Because there's so much money involved now, they're putting rules in to protect the players because of that. And I agree with Goose Gossage. It takes a lot out of the game. The whole second base thing is ridiculous to me. I mean, and I said this on the last show or the last week's show, saying that I think the umpires are not going to really call this as strict as the rule is saying. I still think that if you go back to that Chase Utley slide, during the game and that moment, if the umpire had said, "Hey, that was a slide that was not intentional to go at the base, and he could have made a better attempt at the base," he could have called him out right then and there, and the game would have been controlled. The situation would have been controlled, but he didn't do it. So what does that go back down to? Human error.
Yeah.
And when you start taking human error out of sports and baseball in particular, you're changing the game, in my opinion.
Gossage also talks about policing the game. And that's what was happening in his era. Like when Pete Rose ended Ray Fosse's career, Pete Rose knew he had to answer for that next time he stood up to the plate.
Right.
And Gossage says, I'd like to knock some of these fuckers on their ass and see how they would do against pitchers in the old days. And that's exactly right. If someone took out Buster Posey, that guy, the next time he goes up, is going to get chin music. That's just something he has to understand. And now, where sometimes you do see it, I'm trying to think of pitchers in today's game that...
But the problem with that even, the problem with even the throwing inside and throwing at people is the umpires are so fast to warn the dugouts.
Yeah.
Like, even if there's an inside pitch that they think was that was possibly supposed to be in that guy's back,
or if,
and they'll warn everybody so the next time something happens, there's an ejection.
Or if, even if there's history with these teams, there might be a pre-warning to the game.
Yeah.
So you can't do anything. If the last time these two teams played a month earlier...
At the coaches meeting, at the manager's meeting on the dugout.
Yeah. Or something like that. There'll be a warning in the next game.
And this is all coming from up top. I guarantee it. I mean, the umpires are getting... They're getting more pressure probably from the commissioner's office and other places to control the game better. They don't want to see that type of thing. So they're warning guys earlier. And I know Girardi can't stand it. I totally agree with him. When people... When they get warned for nothing. Like, it's... Because then you can't retaliate. Because then if you retaliate in the third inning, your pitcher's going to get ejected. And you're affecting the game at that point.
Right. The third part of his rant was about Latin players, specifically Jose Bautista and Yoenis Cespedes, bat flipping and pimping home runs. And David Ortiz does it all the time, too. But this is where I feel like he kind of contradicted himself, where he was talking about nerds running baseball and sort of like a pussification of baseball. And then he says, oh, but I hate these guys who are stylists, who style their game and sort of bring flair to the game. I know it's a little different. It's not hustling and taking guys out, but it's still an exciting part of the game, and it actually creates villains in a way to make the game more exciting.
But you're thinking about this. You think about that era. You think about the Goose Gossage era, and there's two elements of the game, to me, that they are very important to them. Hard work, hustle, the grit of the game, and then the respect of the game. When you start talking about the respect of the game, baseball purists, guys who are old school baseball guys, start getting very particular about the way you do things, the way you walk around the mound, the way you... I mean, remember when... Who was that?
Oakland. I know
it was Dallas Braden.
Dallas Braden.
It was Dallas Braden when A-Rod ran across... he ran across the mound from first to third, I think, on an out. He got out or something.
Yeah.
And Braden went apeshit and started going off on him, and A-Rod had no idea.
That was a get off my mound, get off my lawn.
Yeah. So, you know, like things like that... In baseball, there's unwritten rules, and the bat flip, the staring down guys, the you know, slowly jogging like Ortiz does every single time he hits a home run.
Or even if he... The thing I hate most about Ortiz is he'll ground out to second base, jog down to first base, and then literally walk like he's crawling back across the diamond. It takes forever.
Yeah.
I understand why people get annoyed by that, but at the same time, it does bring extra drama to the game, a game that I think needs it.
I think it does need it a little bit at this point, just because of the younger generation watching baseball. One, I mean, this is a I need instant satisfaction era, right? Like, everything's at their fingertips. So a 3-hour baseball game is something that, you know, while you have maybe 6 to 7 like really dynamic plays in a game, if you do a highlight reel,
you need
the patience. You need to have like a respect and love of the game to watch a full baseball game and actually like baseball. So I think those type of things get new fans involved.
But I think the policing...
I don't know if it's for the right reasons, though.
Policing of the game should come in with like a Bautista bat flip, where if he bat flips the hell out of that...
Right.
He's got to answer to that the next time he comes up. And I'm fine with that.
But that's the problem with that is that he knows that's not going to happen.
Well, then it is pussification of the game, though, because that's, I think, such a cool aspect. It's almost like fighting in hockey, where the players police the game.
Right.
You can't... I don't want players to actually literally fight in baseball. But the possibility of getting knocked down at the plate or a hard takeout slide to answer for a time you pimp a home run, I think, is fantastic. It's a fantastic aspect of the game, an added element of the game, when you now strategically should be pimping things. Because it's like, well, it's July 20th. My team is up by 9 runs. I just hit a 480-foot home run. Maybe I don't need to pimp the shit out of this home run. Because what's the point?
And I think you made a very important point here. I think that what baseball is doing is taking the players out of the policing of their own game. And I think that's important, because for years and years and years and years and years and years and years, That's exactly what happened. The players policed the game, and it worked fine. And it worked well for them. It worked well for us as spectators, because we know now that if this was 15 years ago, that if he does that, everybody's watching the next at bat to see what happens.
Yeah.
Or, again, if he's playing a position, what happens with the runner if he's going to go in hard? There's certain things that now, because of warnings and just people looking for these types of things, it's taken away from the game itself, in my opinion. So I agree with Goose. I agree with a lot of things he said.
I agree with a lot of things he said, too. I just think he was a little bit... I think he kind of had... It's like he was all fired up and had to get his comments out, where if he just took a step back and thought about it for 10 minutes, I think he could have gotten it out in a better, more...
productive
made
way.
Made a better point. Because I think his point... His underlying points here are pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
Kind of related is this ESPN The Magazine article on Bryce Harper, Bryce Harper is probably the most... one of the most... what's the word?
Marketable players?
He has some of the most flair in his game.
Right, yeah.
We apologize for that. the dryer's going in the background, but I think it's done now. Harper is not a Latin player, but he kind of has a Latin player flair. And he talks about in this magazine where he wants to bring that aspect back to baseball. He wants baseball players to have the name recognition of a LeBron or a Cam Newton or somebody like that. He said he wants his name, Bryce, to be a household name. Call it cocky, call it whatever you want.
I mean, he's arrogant as hell, but...
You can't blame him for that.
The guys at this level are arrogant. They have to be. I mean, they don't get to that level unless you are. But, there's something, talking about the Latin flair to the game. I mean, if you watch the games, if you watch, the Caribbean World Series, or if you watch these guys down in spring training, the Latin players have so much fun playing baseball. The spectators have so much fun watching. I mean, just from... I used to play in a summer league ball, and there were a couple teams that were mostly, Puerto Rican guys. And, they would bring, 20 to 30 fans out every game, and these guys would just have so much fun. And when you're on the other side and you're seeing it, sometimes you can take it the wrong way. But honestly, these guys just have so much fun doing it, and they do have a certain flair to it. And, I mean, the games, it's like the walk-up music for Castro in Chicago, which I really do hope he brings to the Bronx.
Yep.
I mean, it's like a party in the stands every time because he gets things going, and that's... I like that aspect of the game. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
There was no walk-up music at Steinbrenner Field.
Not on Friday. On Thursday, I heard some, though. I didn't hear anything for Castro, but I did hear some. I don't know if it was chosen by the player or it was just regular.
Yeah, or just random music, background music. Yeah, I really does hope he brings... Maybe it doesn't need to necessarily be the same song, but...
Something high energy.
Something high energy, add some personality to it. I know a lot of guys pick their songs, but I can't name one song on the Yankees...
Jeter would walk up to that song,
the Jay-Z song,
the New York song.
Yeah,
that was the only one I can remember.
And I know
someone does country, McCann or Headley.
O'Neal had the Who when he was. That was a very popular one. That was the only one from the '90s Yankees that sticks out in my mind.
Yeah. So I hope they do that. I mean, that'd be cool. And you know that Castro is slowly becoming one of my favorite players.
Yeah. Yeah, you loved him. We were right there. He turned a nice double play. One thing I noticed seeing him up close in person was his size.
Yeah.
He's a big dude. Not Aaron Judge big. No one's Aaron Judge big. But he was running off the field next to Didi. And he's not only taller, but a lot stockier than Didi. Not in a fat way. But
no, he's just a bigger guy.
Yeah.
He looks like a third baseman. He's got the body type of an Adrian Beltre.
Yeah, I was just gonna say you compared him to a body Adrian Beltre.
And that's why I think that's a little off, but this is why I could see Castro at some point in his Yankees career sliding over to third base at some point, maybe when that Headley's contract is up.
Oh, this is a great transition though. They just announced he's not going to be backing up third base anymore.
Right. And that's good for this year for one Rob Refsnyder, because maybe just maybe these guys are turning a corner on what they think of Refsnyder defensively, and that he can actually handle third base, second base, some outfield. I mean, it's a guy that is showing some flexibility, and I think they're seeing that.
I really agree with the move for a couple reasons. One, let him concentrate on second base.
Right.
He's in a new team coming over to the American League. He's got enough stuff to worry about right now. Let him just concentrate on playing one position. Also, the fact that I think they realize they don't really have a backup shortstop on the team.
Right.
Castro can go over to shortstop.
That's not a problem.
Not a problem. He's done that his whole career. If Didi needs a day off, or if Didi has to get pinch hit for something, and they need a ninth inning shortstop. Castro can do that job fine. Let's not screw around and have him trying to learn third base as well. It's just too much going on all at once.
Right.
And the other reason I love it, because like you said, Ref Snyder.
Yeah, and we didn't realize this. I got a DM on Twitter from one of our guys who follow the show, and I appreciate you sending this, but Ref Snyder actually did play some third base in college, which I didn't realize. So it's not a completely
new
position. Dude
played all over the place.
That's what I'm saying. Like he's really proving to be a utility guy type guy. He could be our very own Ben Zobrist type. You know what I mean? And I think also that the Yankees are realizing that they can't keep that bat in the minor leagues.
Yep.
It's too good.
It'd be ridiculous. He's also going to be 25 this season.
Yep.
It's in a way cruel to be keeping a guy who can hit at the major league level.
Right.
It's like, yeah, he's trying to get better defensively, but there's plenty of guys in the league who are so terribly defensively, but they can hit and they make their way up to the show. So
yeah, and Castro made a play. The other Castro play that just got me excited was there was a ground ball into the hole between second base and first base. He ran over, fielded it beautifully, and there was a runner on first. And rather than taking the out at first base, he went across his body and just threw a dart to Didi at second base for the out. And it was a tough play. Just one of those little things that doesn't hit the score, the box score, but you're seeing with your eyeballs. This is going back to the scouts.
Yeah.
And how he could just turn that. I mean, that was a shortstop play in second base. Yeah. It was athleticism. Awesome.
They have athletic guys in the infield. I'm really excited. It's going to be awesome. Okay, so let's get into some mailbags. We got three mailbags today. The first one is from Tom Turchich. He says, it appears the Yankees have not ventured into the market for Cuban expatriates. The Cubs, Dodgers, Padres, etc. seem to have led the way. This is one reason the Dodgers may have the best farm system in Major League Baseball. Why haven't the Steinbrenners ventured more aggressively into the Cuban market? So thank you, Tom, for the question. It's a good question. The Yankees historically have been very active on the international market, not only Cuba, but also Japan. I mean,
and the Dominican and Venezuela and Panama. I mean, they spent a lot of money over the past, 4 years before that cap came in.
Yeah.
And I just don't think we know a lot of the guys yet.
Well, I think the prices for these Cuban guys are so astronomical when you don't know anything about them.
But what the Yankees have done also is they have done a very good job of getting guys early before the names are there, before this Moncada, before a lot of these guys that are coming out with
Mateo is an example.
Mateo is a guy. Gary Sanchez has been in the organization forever.
Since 16 years old.
I mean, Montero was a 16-year-old prospect at some point as well. Like these guys they're getting them extremely young.
When you have to pay guys like, for instance, Abreu of the White Sox or Cespedes when he got that big contract.
Puig
or Moncada, who cost the Red Sox like $50 million for a 19-year-old kid who everyone says is going to be awesome. But
he's in single A.
That's so much money to spend on a guy that you just don't know anything about. And I think Cashman has really made it a point to get better in the draft and get players that way. And we're finally starting to see the fruits of that labor with all of the prospects that are starting to come up. Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, Jorge Mateo,
Ref Snyder,
Lindgren, Severino. Like, he's concentrated more on that aspect. And I know some of those guys weren't drafted. They were signed internationally. But like you said, they were signed at a younger age where it doesn't cost you an arm and a leg.
Right. And I think we're seeing the fruits of that come up because they did spend a lot of money. I just don't think you know about these names. And they went out and got a lot of guys. And they're in the minor leagues right now. There are guys that are going to start surfacing more. I mean, this prospect list is pretty deep. You mentioned Tom mentioned that the Dodgers have the best farm system in Major League Baseball because they spent a lot of money. Well, the Yankees organization has a pretty good depth right now. I mean, honestly, it's probably one of the more up-and-coming farm systems because look what it was 3 years ago. We didn't know half of these guys' names, and now all of a sudden these guys are extremely exciting. Mateo's just opening eyes everywhere with
all fans.
The
Dodgers have a great farm system, but is that because they
spent money on the international? You see other guys with other teams with good farm systems over the past 5 years, but they were the Royals, the teams that were struggling for years and years and years and just stocked draft picks. The Royals that were Tampa Bay did that for a while. The Nationals did it. Like, these are teams that were the Mets. I mean, look what the Mets did with their pitching staff All these guys were drafted. And that's because they were so terrible for so long that they had high draft picks for a long time. And, you know, once those guys start getting up, you know, towards the higher ranks in the minor leagues, you start seeing it.
But also, the Dodgers have had guys who are American-born and come up through the draft, like Corey Seager and Patterson.
Yeah.
I mean, Peterson.
Their scouting department's done a good job. Yeah. And I know the Yankees scouting department was completely overhauled, and they've done a terrific job. I mean, I think we're seeing a very different type of player in the Yankees minor league system. And there's now a strategy to cultivate these players. Before, one of the big reasons we didn't have a minor league system that was anything to write home about was because we were trading them away. These guys were not staying in our organization. They were getting traded, and we were bringing over high-priced guys that were flair and flash and just didn't pan out. So there's more commitment
to
develop.
Look at the disaster that Jose Contreras was.
Right. There's a commitment to develop the players, and we're seeing this because the game is getting younger, the game is getting more athletic, and you need to have depth. And that's what they're doing, and I think they're doing a very good job.
So, Tom, thank you for the question. It's an interesting topic. I love the fact, you know, I'm very interested to see where the Cuban market and the relationship with baseball goes. Derek Jeter is going down to be an ambassador because the Tampa Rays are playing an exhibition game down there in a couple weeks. Derek Jeter is going to be one of the members who is an ambassador of the game down there. I don't know who else is going, but it's just awesome to see that finally, because it's such a great baseball market.
And that's a big deal. I mean, Derek Jeter, everybody in the world knows who Derek Jeter is. And I got to believe that Joe Torre-Derek Jeter relationship had a lot to do with him going down there because Torre is very much involved with, the brass of Major League Baseball. So, you know, this is a good sign for us, too, with Derek Jeter, because he's seems to be, over the past year, you know, 8 to 12 months, he's becoming more involved with the baseball aspects. A little bit more Yankee stuff. And he wasn't at spring training, but he is starting to
Come around to more of the Yankee spring training when he gets a little bit older.
I agree.
And probably starts to miss it a little bit more.
Right.
I think he's more concentrated on building his brand nationally.
I think so too.
As a businessman, media company.
Yeah.
He's got that children's book or whatever.
He's been writing children's books for a while.
Yeah.
So, but he's got a publishing company.
Publishing company.
Yeah, a children's
publishing
company.
I think he's concentrating more on that. And the
Players Tribune, obviously, is doing very well.
It is doing well. And people make fun of it, but the CC article was amazing.
I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff on there.
Okay, so what do we got from Sebastian?
Sebastian says, "Hey guys, regards from Guatemala. I just read Managers, Should They Stay or Should They Go? The first edition of it, and wanted to suggest a discussion. I have never liked Girardi. Never. Since he started managing the Yankees, I have questioned him a lot. However, in recent years, I've noticed he has done an acceptable job. I'd like to hear your thoughts on him and who you would like to have as a Yankee manager." So thanks, Sebastian. Appreciate it. From Guatemala. That's awesome. Love hearing listeners and readers from all over the world. It's really cool.
So it's interesting what he says here, how he's never liked Girardi, but right now he's actually think he's doing an acceptable job. I feel like people, Yankee fans with Girardi, either hate him or love him. There's not really much in between.
Well, I'm in between.
You are.
Well, he frustrates me at times. We've talked about this 100 times with his bullpen. The way he manages that bullpen kind of frustrated me last year. And the fact that he brings in no-name guys who have zero experience in very large situations that were in the middle of a pennant race. I mean, like things like that are inexcusable.
Yep.
The fact that you throw Betances and Miller in a 6-run game, or not even throw them, but get them warming up in a 6-run game.
Well, they need work. They haven't thrown in 3 days.
Yeah, it's just, and then they're not available the next day or whatever. It's like things like that bother me. But all in all, I think Girardi is a good baseball manager. You know, we've criticized him for having sometimes too much backing, or you know, he defends his guys too much. He's always with the veteran guys a little too much. Like, we saw that with Stephen Drew last year, how he kept running Stephen Drew out every single time. And if I hear Girardi talk about how Stephen Drew went 0-for-4 but hit 3 balls on the nose and they just didn't fall.
Exit velocity.
You know, so that type of thing would bother me when you have a kid who's just raking and can play the position just fine and they don't play him. But
do you realize this is going to be his 9th season as
manager? But this is something that I talked about, I think, a couple of weeks ago with the way that the team is kind of transitioning right now, I think this is a big season for Girardi, because next year we're going to see guys like Judge, Sanchez, Bird. We're seeing a new phase of the younger guys coming into this roster, and it's almost turning over.
And I think that is actually where he'll excel. Do you remember what a
They're going to make a transition to somebody who's going to take these guys under their wing and move forward with them.
Well,
but now would be the time if they were to do a move.
He just signed an extension.
I'm just saying that doesn't. I'm saying this year is a big year for him to show.
He did a great job. He won Manager of the Year with the Marlins, and that was a team of 20-year-olds.
Right. I think he would do very well with young guys.
I think he's better with young guys, because with old guys he gets very weird with veterans, and he gets crazy with their playing time and the bullpen work and all that stuff. I think drives people crazy.
Right.
So,
but I think it's because those are the veteran guys and he has more of a respect for what they do and who they are. Whereas the younger guys, and he's managing them on their baseball abilities, and he's just going off, this is a player. They don't have a brand or a giant contract attached to him, so he can do whatever he feels is right with that player.
So Sebastian asks, who would you like to have as a Yankees manager? Let's do two things. Do you think that the next manager is going to be maybe somebody in-house, where like a Tony Pena or something like that, who transitions over? Or do you think it's going to be totally outside the organization, a name?
I don't think a name is as important, unless it's a name that was associated with the Yankees, like a Don Mattingly type guy. I think Don Mattingly is going to have some show me years in the Marlins organization. I don't think he's going to have a huge leash, but I think that people are going to see a lot more of his managing style, just because he was really putting up with a lot of names in the Dodgers organization.
He was in also a no-win situation, not a no-win situation with the Dodgers, but it was World Series or bust.
Yeah. So I think we're going to see a lot more as a manager of what Mattingly is this year with the Marlins, just because he has a completely different roster and a lot of young guys. But I don't think Girardi's going anywhere. And honestly,
I
don't want him to go anywhere, because when we did our managers discussion about guys that I think we did a ranking too, outside what Drew did. And if you haven't checked that article out, definitely check it out. He did a two-part series of the managers article, and it was really good. But we had like our rankings, and we had Joe Maddon at the top. And just because I think one of the things we like about him is
the way that he
works with young guys really well. He gets their attention. He speaks to them.
He gets the most out of teams.
And I think Girardi is very similar in the regards with young guys. I think he does get a lot out of that. And I think he knows the game very well. But no one's disputing that Joe Girardi doesn't know what he's doing. I think any manager would frustrate me just because we watch the game.
Exactly.
So
that's the thing. You're never going to be 100% happy. I was mad at Joe Torre all the way he would use his bullpen.
Right.
Girardi gets a lot out. He's the last two seasons the Yankees have competed for playoff spots.
Yes.
14 they didn't make the playoffs, but 15 obviously they made the playoff game. Most managers would have had that team win 82 games. And Girardi got them to mid to high 80s and competing for a playoff spot, and I think you got to give him credit for that.
If you look at what happened at the end of last year and the
team totally broke down.
The team stopped hitting the ball. We couldn't score runs at all. And the fact that he kept in the playoff hunt, was in the AL East hunt for majority of the season. He did a very good job managing the team last year. While we criticize his bullpen management and his frustration of that, honestly, when you take a step back and look at the guys that he had available to him and the guys that he trusted, he had two guys that he trusted. That was it.
Yeah.
Jason Shreve dropped off the face of the earth at the end of last
year. He trusted Wilson.
Wilson was solid. But the rest of the guys were, it was a Scranton Express. I mean, he was literally managing a AAA bullpen at the end of the year.
Maybe the Yankees would bring up a guy like Luis Soho, who I know is managing and coaching in their minor league system, once he gets a little bit more experience.
I could see that too.
He's like a beloved sort of Yankee family guy. So I think that something like that could be interesting.
I don't think that the Yankees would go out and get just a name. Yeah.
I don't especially a retread.
I mean, retread, like a Dusty Baker type thing, or like one of those guys. Well, you know the name. But
I don't know why the Nationals signed Dusty Baker. I think that's going to be a disaster.
I don't know. I actually think that's not a bad thing for what they have over there, because they have a lot of big guys, and I feel like he's a player's manager.
I'm not going to say it's going to be as bad as Bobby Valentine in Boston, but it's not going to be good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that one actually wasn't the worst. I don't think Matt Williams was. But I think you're obviously not ready for the job last year.
Both agree we love Joe Maddon.
Yes.
All right. So the last mailbag is from Nick, and Nick says, the back three of our bullpen is obviously dominant with Chapman, Miller, and Betances. With that being said, losing Wilson and Warren is a big loss. Who in spring training impressed you so far to fill in the middle relief roles? You got to figure Nova and Shreve are going to make it to the pen, so who would you pick for the two open spots? And there actually might be more than two open spots, but let's talk about some of the guys who aren't the big names in the bullpen. Nick is absolutely right. As much as I'm still in favor of the Adam Warren trade, I'd rather have Castro than Warren. Warren is a huge loss for this team. He was such a valuable arm. And I think Wilson is going to be a loss as well. I still don't fully understand that trade, but...
Again, it was a depth move. It was they have guys they think they can plug in there. I think... So you mentioned Nova, and Nick mentioned Nova and Shreve. I think Shreve absolutely is going to be, I think at the beginning of the season, especially with the 30-game suspension for Chapman, he's going to slot in as that seventh inning guy. I mean, that's exactly what his role was in the first half of last year, and he did a really good job.
I think people forget how good he was.
He was phenomenal. And that actually saved that trade, for...
Banuelos.
Yeah, for Banuelos, but it was the right-hander.
Carpenter?
Yes, David Carpenter, who was actually the guy that everybody was excited about.
I don't think I've ever hated somebody more than I hated David Carpenter.
But he was the guy that...
Oh, he throws so hard. He reached 98 on the gun. It could not have been more down the middle.
But Shreve definitely saved that trade, and I think we're going to see him slide in the beginning of the season into that same spot, and then Joe is definitely going to have to manage him a little bit better, just so that he can stay healthy throughout the entire season. But Shreve has to do the same thing. I mean, he had a big learning experience last year, I think, with the way he finished the season. And yeah. I think he's, from the interviews I'm hearing about him, him talk, he's definitely taken a lot from that, and he's grown as a professional, I think, from last season. So I'm looking for really good things from him. So he's going to absolutely be a staple in that bullpen.
But some of the other guys that were on the Scranton Express...
But even before we get to that, he mentioned Nova. I don't think Nova's a lock right now to be in the bullpen. I honestly could see Joe Girardi coming out of spring with a quasi-six-man rotation to limit Tanaka's innings early, to limit CeCe's innings early, to limit Evaldi's innings early, and get these guys into some kind of a groove. But
we know Tanaka, Pineda, Evaldi, and Severino have no shot at pitching out of the pen.
Right.
CeCe and... Nova are the two that...
CeCe's not going to pitch out of the pen either. I don't see that happening.
I don't see it happening either, but his performance could warrant the fact that he does
not... With the amount of lefties that we have in the bullpen already existing, I don't see it happening.
It might just be a fact where they just can't run him out there every day, every fifth day as a starter.
I think that's why we're going to see some kind of a... And I say a quasi-six-man because it's not going to be a true six-man. It's going to be guys getting extra rest... And plugged into their spots.
We also know nothing ever goes to plan, and somebody will most likely get injured.
Right.
So
that's just what happens.
Nova will get plenty of starts.
No doubt.
He could also be the long man. I don't see them using him in a short role, though, because they want to have the option if someone goes down where he can jump in right to be a starter.
So that's he's an interesting spot. That's why I think he is going to be in that rotation.
Kind of that weird Adam Warren spot.
Yeah. So,
but I don't know if he'll be as good out of the pen as Adam Warren was.
So we'll see Nova, and I definitely think in a lot of starts. And so that leads us to start talking about some of the guys that we saw last year. And then, you know, I think to me, one of the forgotten guys that nobody's really talked about as much mainstream, and, you know, he was a huge prospect and fits into that Justin Wilson lefty role is Jacob Lindgren. I think Lindgren is going to be a big part of this bullpen, especially if he comes back and he's healthy, because he went under the knife last year, and it was kind of unexpected. We really didn't see it coming.
He had 2 weeks with the team in May, and then all of a sudden, boom.
He struggled in those 2 weeks as well. He was not effective.
He didn't look good.
And I think a lot of
You know what he did? He looked overmatched. He looked like he wasn't ready for the major leagues.
Or it could have been an injury, and I think something was going on with him. Because, I don't know, I just wasn't impressed with what I saw.
I wasn't either.
And I feel like he may have been an injured pitcher out there and just trying to... You know, just trying to bust it because he had his opportunity. He didn't want to say, "Hey, I'm hurt." I'm looking to see what Lindgren does this year. I think he has an opportunity to really step up. And if he does well, if he's a guy that's extremely effective out of there, you know, you're looking at then we need to fill some right-handed spots because then you have Shreve, Chasen Shreve, Lindgren as another two lefties to go in with Chapman and Miller. I mean, you got guys like James Pazos as well, who's a lefty.
A lot of lefties.
So there's going to be competition with that. But you're the guy I'm focused on, the two right-handed relievers that they're going to be adding to the bullpen are the guys that I'm looking at.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be an open competition, and whoever pitches well gets the spot. So I wasn't impressed with any of them at the end of last year. They were all in over their heads in a playoff race, pitching in big moments. I mean, I think it was Nick Rumbelo who had to face
the Blue Jays
middle of the order, which is just a gauntlet of hell.
I think the one guy that you have to really look at, who I think Joe Girardi has confidence in right now and really showed well in the beginning of last season until that line drive came back up the middle, and I'm talking about Brian Mitchell. And while he doesn't say anything that line drive affected him, I think the line drive clearly affected him in some way.
Okay, and not.
He was shaken. I don't know if he was shaken or just hesitant or whatnot, but he was a different pitcher afterwards.
He might be wearing the Spaceballs helmet this year.
It's possible. But he's a guy I think is going to be Adam Warren. I think he's going to be that guy. I think he's going to be available in short situations, and then we'll see him kind of stretched out. But he's also a guy that they've had stretched out in the past that could be a starter as well. So that's why I think Brian Mitchell is one of the reasons why they were all right with saying we can continue on without Adam Warren.
Definitely. All right, Nick, thanks for the mailbag question. Okay, so we're going to preview the Giants and the Padres, and then we're going to wrap this show up. So the Giants and the Padres are both on the Yankees schedule this summer.
And that's why we're talking about them.
Yes.
Because otherwise we would not be talking about these teams.
Well, I think the Giants could be a legit team this year.
Yeah.
They're projected to finish second in the division, but Baseball Prospectus has the Dodgers 7 games ahead of them. So while the Giants are going to be better than they were last year, I don't think that even qualifies them for the playoffs. Maybe a wild card spot. They made 2 big splashes, though. Samardzija and Cueto. A lot of money on those guys. That actually forms a pretty legit rotation.
If we're calling Samardzija a legit pitcher, because that's not what we saw last year.
He should be better in the National League.
He should hopefully regain his form.
He's no longer in a hitter's ballpark.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people said last year he was just pitching to not get injured because he knew he had a payday coming.
That's ridiculous.
He was throwing a lot of fastballs. That makes me question him as a pitcher. But
makes me question him as a lot of things.
The rotation, Bumgarner, who I love. Matt Cain, who should be better.
He had a down year, but he was hurt and came back, so he's another year removed from injury,
I believe. Plus Cueto and Samardzija. That's if they all pitch to their potential legit four
men. Yeah, no doubt. And that's absolutely going to help them. If Samardzija can regain what he was, Bruce Bochy is a hell of a manager. He definitely gets the most out of his guys as well. And Bumgarner is, he's a stud. He's a big game pitcher. He's a throwback. That's a guy who's a throwback who'll just say, get on my back, let's go. He's kind of like an old CeCe, where CeCe would just be a hoss and throw innings and innings and innings. But 7 games back from the Dodgers, to me, is a lot of games. I think if they don't close that gap and compete for that NL East or NL West title, they're going to have a hard time with the wild card, because if you look at what happened in the NL Central last year, those teams all won 90 games.
97.
Yeah.
The Cubs won 97, Pirates 98.
That's insane. Ridiculous. Insane. That's your wild card right there. So whoever's going to get that wild card is
low 90s.
You better be a damn good team.
Right.
Yeah, and you better rack up wins. So that wild card's going to be tough to get.
I do question Bruce Bochy a little bit, though, the fact that he's won the World Series 3 times, but then finished in far out of the playoffs the years after. You got to question, like, why can't he get a little bit more out of his team? It kind of feels like they just totally mentally check out the following year.
It's possible, but they also had a lot of injuries.
A lot of injuries.
They had, their offense, they lost Sandoval.
Mentioned with Girardi. Girardi wouldn't have let that happen.
You're right. I think Girardi.
Maybe he wouldn't have won 3 World Series, but his team wouldn't have sucked the following year.
If you listen to Bruce Bochy talk and you listen to Joe Girardi talk, they're two very different people. Girardi to me has like an insanely high baseball IQ, whereas Bochy I think does a lot of
savant.
He does a lot of feel. He's an old school guy. He's cut from the Goose Gossage cloth, where he's just trying to see and adjust on the fly because of his eyeballs.
Unfortunately, the Giants are coming to Yankee Stadium. If the Yankees were going out to San Francisco, I definitely would have gone, because I love San Francisco. I was just out there. But I have seen one game at that ballpark. It's an amazing ballpark. It's right on the water, great views, a lot of fun.
It's kind of cool though that the Giants are coming to New York as well. I think that's a unique thing, them coming to
the
Bronx.
To see a game at the old Yankee Stadium when Barry Bonds was on the Giants. I want to say this was 2006.
Yeah.
Or maybe this was Clemens. Clemens was on the team and hit Barry Bonds. So this had to have been 2003.
Okay.
Barry Bonds hit the most mammoth home run I've ever seen. It went halfway in the upper deck. It was amazing.
Yeah, so I think having them come in and just, you know, the history, obviously, of the Giants, you're going to have some older fans that, you know, maybe had parents or grandparents that were Giants fans.
A lot of still in the New York area.
Yeah, absolutely. So
the Padres are going to suck. They're projected to finish fourth in the division. The only reason they're not going to finish last in the division is because the Rockies suck extra. But they went for it last year with the Upton brothers and Kemp and Big Game James, not so big game, kind of just mediocre game James Shield. And they didn't work out for them.
Yeah, and they did a lot of dumping of salary this year. So they got guys that are not as high priced. They still have Matt. I'm surprised Matt Kemp's still on that team, actually.
No one's going to take him. No one's going to take that contract.
I guess that's the reason.
Took the contract from the reason they got him from the Dodgers in division. Was because they're like, yeah, we'll pay him. Like, okay, gladly.
I'm surprised there wasn't some kind of a workout where they pay some of it and they got rid of him for prospects or whatnot. But, I mean, I know he's injury prone and he's really fallen off the map as that guy he was with the
Rihanna
Dodgers.
Rihanna ruined him.
were they an item?
Yeah.
I missed that one. But, you know, he's a hell of a ball player when he's healthy. I just don't think he's going to ever be fully healthy again for the duration of a season. So we'll see.
The Padres also have former Yankee greats Yanhervis Solarte and Jose Perella.
What a good fella.
We did so much podcasting on Jose Perella at the beginning of last year. Kind of feels stupid.
Well, I mean, he was that super utility guy that now Rob Refsheimer is going to be. That's actually, I didn't even think about that. He's now Jose Perella.
Except better.
And Solarte actually turned out to be a pretty good ball player. You know, unbeknownst to us that end of the year drought or fall off the map for Solarte was just actually just a bad slump.
I give him credit.
Because we expected him to be that guy.
He's put up pretty much the same numbers as Chase Headley over
They're
the
very
last
comparable.
Year and a half.
They're extremely comparable.
Yeah, it's scary. Yeah. Solarte's probably like, when am I getting my $10 million a year? All right, so that's going to do it for this episode. Again, check out the 60-second episode. Hopefully the audio is working. We'll talk to you next time.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.